Our scripture reading this morning is Psalm 46. The beloved is our refuge and our strength, a loving presence in times of trouble. Therefore, we need not fear, though the earth should change, the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. There is a river whose streams make glad the holy city, the holy habitation of the Most High. The beloved is the midst of it. It shall not be moved. Our loving Creator is an ever-present help. The nations may be at war, countries left in ruins. Yet is the voice of the Almighty heard, slowly breaking through hearts of stone. The beloved is ever with us, the infinite heart of love. Come, behold the works of the beloved, how love does reign even in humanity's desolation. For the beloved yearns for wars to cease, shining light into fearful hearts, loving even those who oppress the weak, refining hearts of steel. Be still and know that I am love. Awaken, befriend justice and mercy. Do you not know you bear my love? Who among you will respond? O Blessed One, you know all hearts. You are ever with us. May love ever guide our lives. So ends our scripture reading. Words from our tradition for today's present day understanding.
Of July, our pastor, the Reverend Jim Rigby, takes a writing leave to work on his book, and that's sad because we miss him. But it's also exciting because it gives us the opportunity to hear from folks that we don't often hear from at St. Andrew's. So we have a tremendous lineup of creative and inspiring and talented guest preachers. And the guest preacher that we have today is all of those things, the Reverend Dr. David Zuniga. David is a clinical psychologist. He's also practiced as a chaplain. He's also a Zen Buddhist priest. He's the first Westerner to be ordained in the Taigo order, which I learned from him, is one of the two largest and oldest lineages of Zen Buddhism in South Korea. He's also only the third Buddhist to be licensed as a hospital and hospice chaplain in the U.S. Previously, he practiced as a Zen chaplain in pediatric and adult end-of-life healthcare, and currently he works as a psychologist where he is interested in mindfulness, end-of-life issues, and spiritually integrative counseling. David, we're tremendously lucky to have you, and we look forward to hearing from you this morning. Please join me in welcoming David Zuniga.
Thank you so much for having me. A little personal note before we get started. So I had the great honor of preaching at your 8:45 service, and I have to say I was so genuinely moved. It was a smaller, more intimate service, and we all gathered for the Eucharist right up here, and I was so moved that a little personal sharing. My wife and I, our family, were going on vacation this week, and so my wife and kids, I have had the honor of preaching here before, and my kids have been here before, so my wife and I made a family decision, and we were like, well, why don't you guys stay home and pack? But I loved the service so much that between services, I called my wife, and I was like, you know, I think my kids, our kids, would also really enjoy being here, so they're here with us today, so. thank you for having us, and I will say, too, on a little note, I really appreciated the reading from Psalms today, and, you know, if you think about that, it's a powerful reading. It talks about the nations being at war, and countries are in chaos, and the mountains are rumbling, and I say that because I'm a Zen Buddhist priest, I'm also a clinical psychologist, and there's a lot of stressful stuff happening in our society. the stress of current events and some of the, as we'd say in Buddhism, delusions and unskillful behavior that's happening is actually driving people in. Just kind of the existential angst of what's happening in our world right now is driving people in for therapy. So I thought that that beautiful psalm passage that Donna read was really appropriate for our times right now in the present moment. I was also moved by that passage because, you know, it talks about the beloved and seeking refuge, and that's what mindfulness is all about. So I'm here today to speak on the practice of mindfulness. And what we'll do today, if it's okay with everybody, is I'll do a little mindfulness multicultural guided exercise. And so let's go ahead and get started with that. So real quick, before we begin, two thoughts on meditation. The first is your body. Notice your body. You all are sitting in chairs, and chairs are actually a great skillful vehicle for mindfulness. The most important thing when it comes to meditation is do what works for you in the moment. There are thousands of different meditation styles. One is mindfulness. Mindfulness is one among many. We've probably got like 200 people in the congregation today, I'm guessing. And some of you I've met before, and some of you I haven't, but I'm going to go ahead and make a blanket statement that I think is true. Each and every one of you could ask me, Dave, what's the best form of meditation? And I'm going to tell you, for each and every one of you, right now in the present moment, even though I've never met you, the best form of meditation is the one that works for you in the moment. That's the best form of meditation, the one that works for you in the moment. Meditation is a lot like sports. It's kind of funny that I use sports analogies because I'm not very athletic. But, you know, meditation is a lot like sports. Just like an athlete trains their body, a meditator trains their mind. Just like your body has different athletic processes, different parts of your brain are associated with different mental and cognitive states. So a meditator trains their body just like an athlete. Got that wrong. A meditator trains their brain just like an athlete trains their body. So for your practice, for your physical practice, the only thing I recommend with meditation is that you get your body comfortable. Whatever posture works for you, you just don't want your body to get in the way, and you want your body to be comfortable. Most people find it helpful to have their spine straight, so the chairs you have to meditate are actually really great. Most people find it helpful to have their spine and their neck straight, and then you just kind of let your hands and your shoulders rest. The other thing about meditation, I often hear people say, I'm not any good at meditation, to which I say, I bet you're actually a lot better than you realize. People often think they're not good at meditation because they get distracted. But here's the thing. Your brain has 80 billion cells in it. You're going to be distracted. Being distracted is a normal part of life. If you get distracted in your meditation, I say good for you. That's a sign that you're paying attention. All you need to do is gently bring yourself back to the path again and again and again. That's what meditation is all about. So we'll start with meditation, and then I'll talk a little more about it. And we'll begin. As we begin our meditation, take a moment to notice your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Breathing at your own pace. Breathing at your own rhythm. Breathing in and breathing out. And if you find yourself distracted, that's okay. Distractions are a normal part of life. Just bring yourself back to your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And if you like, expanding your awareness to your body. You might like to scan your body or focus on a particular part of your body. We put a lot of stress and tension on our bodies, sometimes without even realizing it. For now, just being a good friend to your body and listening to your body and what it has to tell you. And if you like, expanding your awareness to notice any emotions you might be experiencing. We can hold a lot of stress and emotions in our body. For now, just being a good friend to yourself and being aware of what you're experiencing and giving yourself permission to feel whatever it is that you need to feel, moment to moment to moment. And being aware, too, of any thoughts that may enter your experience. Not creating thoughts and not resisting thoughts. Just letting the thoughts be like clouds in the sky. The thoughts come and the thoughts go. We don't control the clouds, and we don't need to control our thoughts. Just noticing them and letting them go. Sitting in a state of stillness and relaxation, breathing in and breathing out. And as we near the end of our meditation, being aware of your environment. What is it like for your physical self, your emotional self, your thinking self, to be sitting in a chair in a church on a Sunday morning in the middle of July with everyone around you, cultivating awareness of the ever-changing state of existence as we're breathing in and breathing out together. Good job, everybody. So I always like to ask when I lead a little guided meditation, how was that? Good? Was it anybody, like in the last congregation, it was smaller, and so I got a lot of thumbs up, and that was cool to get thumbs up. But what I said to the 845 congregation, I said, it's also okay to give a thumbs maybe or a thumbs down. Was that hard for anybody? In a true mindfulness sense, there's no bad feedback. Was that hard or difficult? Wow, we got a lot of really good meditators. A couple thoughts on meditation. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Sometimes meditation is just hard. I meditate 7 days a week, and sometimes I have really hard practice. Maybe I'm sleepy, maybe I'm distracted, maybe I'm agitated. But even on my worst days, I feel like my meditation still has value. It's kind of like taking out the psychological garbage. You know, I let go of things so then I can be more present to what really matters in my life. In your missalette, I made a little resource handout. You don't need to look at it right now, but I wanted to speak a little bit to what the practice of mindfulness is all about. And one of the challenges of mindfulness is that mindfulness is kind of simultaneously everywhere and nowhere in our society. Mindfulness is huge. It's huge in biological healthcare. It's definitely huge in spirituality. It's also huge in psychology. In fact, you could argue that what we call mindfulness is the basis for most of the main forms of clinical treatments that we use in psychology today. So mindfulness is everywhere, which is great, but a challenge of mindfulness is that it's everywhere. And so sometimes it's hard to find good resources. Interestingly, I'm kind of have a side, this is what a nerd I am, I have a side hobby of like tracking mindfulness in pop culture. Dick Cheney has used the word mindfulness in speeches. George Bush has used the word mindfulness in speeches. So it's always good to consider the source of which you're studying mindfulness. So here are two definitions of mindfulness that I like that you all have in your missalette. The first is from a gentleman named Jon Kabat-Zinn, a neurologist from MIT. He's a good resource when it comes to mindfulness. So this is what Jon Kabat-Zinn, a neurologist, a researcher of the brain, defines mindfulness as. Mindfulness, according to Jon Kabat-Zinn, is, quote, the awareness that emerges through paying attention in the present moment and non-judgmentally to the unfolding of experience moment to moment. Jon Kabat-Zinn. Very nice. I like that definition. This is another definition. The funny thing about this, I speak a lot on mindfulness in town, and I always use this second definition. So if you've ever heard me speak before, you've probably heard me read this passage, but it's so good, I can't not use it. This is from the book Tuesdays with Maury, which some of you may have read. It's a true story. The subject of the book, Maury Schwartz, was a sociologist. He was a college professor, and he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. As most of you probably know, Lou Gehrig's disease is a terminal illness. If you're diagnosed with it, it is not curable. So Maury Schwartz knew that he was terminally ill. One of his former students came to see him every Tuesday. They came up with the book Tuesdays with Maury. In the book, Maury Schwartz himself is Jewish, and I mention that intentionally because he was also an avid mindfulness meditation practitioner. And for my money, I think this is probably the best definition of mindfulness out there. And I love that it didn't come from Buddhism, which just goes to show that you don't have to be Buddhist to do mindfulness meditation. So here's Maury Schwartz's definition of mindfulness. The other thing I want to say, you'll notice he doesn't use the term mindfulness per se. He uses the term detachment. Now, if we use the term detachment in a Western context, that's a bad thing, right? Like if you're detached, you're aloof, you're disengaged, you're removed, maybe you're uncaring, you have defense mechanisms, you're separate, right? In Buddhism, it's the exact opposite. Detachment is what you're going for. Detachment, you would either say, is a fruit of your mindfulness practice, like if you do mindfulness meditation, you will cultivate the flower of detachment. Or you could say that detachment is synonymous with mindfulness. So here's Maury Schwartz. You know what the Buddhists say? Don't cling to things, because everything is impermanent. Detachment doesn't mean you don't let the experience penetrate you. On the contrary, you let it penetrate you fully. That's how you're able to leave it. If you hold back on the emotions, if you don't allow yourself to go all the way through them, you can never get to being detached. You're too busy being afraid. You're afraid of the pain. You're afraid of the grief. You're afraid of the vulnerability that loving entails. But by throwing yourself into these emotions, by allowing yourself to dive in all the way over your head in, you experience them fully and completely. You know what pain is. You know what love is. You know what grief is. And only then can you say, all right, I have experienced that emotion. I recognize that moment, that emotion. Now I need to detach from that emotion for a moment. I know you think this is just about dying, but it's like I keep telling you. When you learn how to die, you learn how to live. Tuesdays with Maury. So I really, really like that passage, both of those passages, because I think they describe what mindfulness is all about. When we use the term mindfulness, what do we mean? Mindfulness is basically, in psychology, we call it metacognition. It's an awareness of your awareness. You're aware of your physical self, your body, and your physical processes. You're aware of your emotional self. You're aware of your thinking self, and you're aware of yourself and your environment. For example, what does it feel like to be at St. Andrew's on a Sunday morning? What wisdom is your body telling you? What emotions are you experiencing? What thoughts are you experiencing? Mindfulness is an active, engaged, moment-to-moment awareness of all the subtle things that are happening in the organism that we call you. That's what mindfulness is. Some of the reasons this is helpful. One, it's helpful because if we're not careful, we can sleepwalk through a lot of our life. You know, even Buddhist monks do it. It's very, very natural to do. We can get hijacked. We can get triggered by a thought, by emotion, by something in our environment, and then it's off to the races. So just like I was telling you before we meditated, and I said, if you get distracted in your meditation, that's actually a good thing. In psychology, we call that attention control. Noticing when you get waylaid, noticing when you get hijacked, and bringing yourself back. Bringing yourself back to what matters the most. Infinitely valuable. no matter who we are, no matter how hard we work, there are some things beyond our control. One thing we can have a lot more awareness and control over is where we put our thoughts and where we put our emotions. And when you have that kind of awareness and control, then you have a great deal of skillfulness. The other thing that I think mindfulness can be very helpful with providing is what we call flow states. I'm willing to bet we got a lot of folks in the congregation today, a lot of great diversity, different beliefs, philosophies, cultural backgrounds, all that kind of good stuff. I'm willing to bet each and every person in here at one time or another has had an experience where in a holy, natural, completely organic way, you step outside of yourself and you become immersed in something that is sacred to you. You kind of lose your sense of time and space, and you just become the process of the thing that is sacred to you in a restorative, rejuvenating way. Maybe you're playing with a child or grandchild, playing with a dog, having a delicious meal, exercising, playing music, listening to music. But every single one of us at one time or another has a time, I think, where you step outside of yourself and you just become immersed in something that is sacred to you. That's mindfulness. We think of mindfulness as some like fancy practice with fancy hand mudras that you do on meditation cushions, and that's okay, that's meditation. But anything can be a vehicle of meditation. Anything can be a vehicle of meditation. And I say this too because sometimes even in the research literature, John Kabat-Zinn himself says this. He uses the term the miracle of mindfulness. Maybe some of you heard that. And there's a ton of research on the benefits of mindfulness for depression, anxiety, addiction, also things like wellness and self-actualization, all kinds of good stuff. But the last note I want to leave you all with is we do need to be a little careful with the practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is really great. I think mindfulness can transform the way we live, and I think it can also transform our society. But mindfulness doesn't mean that everything is like buttercups and rainbows and, you know, roses and stuff like that. Mindfulness doesn't mean that you won't experience difficulty. You will experience difficulty. I really believe that sometimes the more you're in the world, the more difficulty you may experience. If you look at like great psychologists, artists, people doing social justice, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Maya Angelou, whoever it is, the Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela, anybody in our society who's doing good work because you're fighting for social change, you're fighting for social justice, you might sometimes experience great pain. And in Buddhism and psychology, I think we draw a distinction. There's pain and there's suffering. You will experience pain in your life. It's said that in the mythology of Buddhism, before the Buddha created mindfulness meditation, he had what we call the great visions. One of those visions was of someone who was very, very sick. One of those visions was of someone who was very elderly and suffering. And one of those visions was of someone dying. And the Buddha was kind of rocked to his core with the knowledge that he would someday get older, he would someday get sick, and he would someday die. And that sounds kind of crazy, right? Because you're like, you're the Buddha. You should know better than that, right? Like, everybody gets older, everybody gets sick, everybody eventually dies. Like, come on, Buddha, that's not rocket science, right? But death and pain can make beginners of us all. We can all be challenged by these things, you know? And there's a difference between knowing something intellectually and knowing it in a heartfelt, experiential way. And so it's said in the mythology of Buddhism that the Buddha wanted to create mindfulness meditation as a way to alleviate kind of the universal and existential forms of suffering in the world. But that is one key thing about mindfulness. Mindfulness doesn't mean that everything will be smooth sailing for the rest of your life. You will encounter difficulty if you're in the world doing good and necessary work. But hopefully, through the practice of mindfulness, we don't get stuck as much. We don't get triggered as much. And when we get waylaid, when we get triggered, we can bring ourselves back to the skillful path again and again and again. to do the work that matters in our world so much. Thank you, my friends.